Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing today? I'm doing just peachy. You're doing just peachy. This is the last show of the week, bitch. Cause we got a little holiday coming up over here. So, got some stuff I gotta do, and won't have time to do shows, upload stuff, and all that funness. But needless to say, I'll squeeze in a great final show for this week for you guys. Before I'm on break here for just a little bit for Thanksgiving. A lot of stuff to get to. Reuters is reporting something that can't be overstated enough how scary it is that Turkey shot down a Russian plane. For those of you that don't get it already, this is a huge deal, man, because this is that's a NATO ally shooting down a Russian plane. That's World War III, man. You should be afraid, because Vladimir Putin ain't gonna take that lightly. And if Turkey gets involved in a military conflict with Russia, what's the U.S. gonna do? I mean, according to our treaties, we gotta go and fight, and that means we're in a hot war against Russia. I'm giving myself the chills as I'm talking here. I'm going to open up with that because of how heavy the situation is. Then I'm going to give you a general breakdown of the state of the presidential race. We'll get into rapper Killer Mike endorsing Bernie Sanders, which is fucking awesome. I could watch that video all day long. Donald Trump speaking at a rally in Ohio, wanting to bring back the worst of the worst of the Bush administration. Bill O'Reilly even goes after Trump for his neo-Nazi tweets, and I got a lot more in the show as well, including Sam Harris and California textbooks basically functioning like Texas textbooks. Or that's not even fair, maybe to Texas, functioning more like Mississippi textbooks in the quality of the stuff that's in there. So I'll cover all this and much more. Let's go ahead and get started here, and we'll do it with the scariest thing I've read in a while. Reuters is reporting that Turkey shot down a Russian warplane today. This is a huge deal. There are conflicting reports on virtually every aspect of the story at this point. Russia says that the plane was in Syrian airspace, which is, of course, just over the border. Turkey said that's not true. The plane was in their airspace, in Turkish airspace, and they say that they warned Russia repeatedly to leave. NATO called an emergency meeting to discuss this issue. For those of you who don't understand just how serious this is here, Turkey, of course, is a Western ally, and this looks like it's going to tank any chance of cooperation that we had after when it looked like France and Russia could work together and they could fight ISIS, and Russia's aligning with the West against a common enemy, which of course was one of very few positive things that could ever come out of such a grotesque situation like the terrorist attack that happened. Now, Putin said in response to this, quote, "We will never tolerate such crimes like this one committed today." And then Obama chimed in and he said, "Turkey has a right to defend its territory." So again, for those of you who don't understand just how serious this is, the gravity of this situation, Turkey is in NATO, and they just committed what is effectively an act of war against Russia. And Vladimir Putin, not necessarily known for his patience, if he decides to respond in a military way to Turkey, what does the U.S. do? Because according to our treaties and the way the system works, that you attack one NATO ally, you attack all NATO allies, and that means that we would be engaged in a hot war with Russia like that. So I'm on edge today. I know others should be on edge today. The media is covering this in somewhat of a serious way, but they're not giving it the extent of coverage that it deserves because you don't know what can happen moving here forward. Everybody forgets World War I was started because Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. And then somehow everybody ever in the world was involved because this country was drawn in, and then they had an allegiance with that country, and then that country had to come in and fight, and then they attacked that country had an allegiance with the other country, and next thing you know, everybody was fucking fighting. It's a scary situation. And also, let me just be clear about the way this went down. There's so many different conflicting reports that you don't know what's true. But if I had to give you my opinion or my educated guess as to what happened here, I would say that, indeed, the plane probably was in Turkish airspace, and they didn't have to shoot it down, but they decided to shoot it down. And there's evidence in the past of the Turkish army not necessarily being super anti-ISIS and not really being anti-jihadist in their crackdown and their fighting. They're more focused on the PKK and the Kurds when the Kurds are fighting against ISIS and jihadists. So, you know, is it possible that you have the Turkish army pulling the trigger too quickly, making too quick a decision because they just don't like Russia and what they stand for and what they're doing, and they view them as more of the enemy than ISIS, for example? That is possible. It's a weird thing to think about, but, you know, Tayyip Erdogan, the leader in Turkey, is a fundamentalist Muslim in his own right, and I certainly wouldn't fucking trust that guy, okay? I mean, Saudi Arabia is worse, and they're more extreme, but Erdogan, no, I don't fucking trust him. There's evidence that he's stolen elections before, and there's evidence that, you know, he cracks down on all political dissent. He locks up people who disagree with him and his administration, and he's just a corrupt politician through and through. He's power hungry, and maybe it is the case that his arrogance simply led him to say, fuck it, shoot down the plane. I'm not even going to warn him again, not even realizing that this could tumble into World War III. Or simply not caring, because he is an arrogant moron, as we've seen from a plethora of previous comments that he's made. But my guess is the plane was probably in Turkish airspace, and perhaps they were warned. Allegedly, there was no response from the Russian aircraft, so maybe they didn't hear it, or whatever possible reason, who knows. But is it the case that Russia was, you know, going to start bombing the Turkish army in Turkey? No, I don't believe that for a second, and if that's the argument that the West is going to try to make against Russia, they could take that for a fucking hike, because I don't believe that for a second. You know, Russia actually is fighting jihadists in Syria. They've been for a while now. All reports to the contrary have no basis. In fact, I've seen these faux reports that come out from rebel-linked fake human rights organizations that say, oh, Russia did nothing but attack civilians for, you know, however long. And then you do research and you realize oftentimes what they do is they'll take these human rights organizations that are real human rights organizations, they'll switch around like two different words and they'll go, we're a new human rights organization, and then everything they do is advocacy on the part of the rebels, regardless of who the rebels actually are. And in Syria at this point, they're overwhelmingly jihadists and Islamists. So I actually, to be honest, I don't like Vladimir Putin. In fact, I dislike Vladimir Putin, but do I trust him more than I trust Tayyip Erdogan and the story that they're going to give us out of Turkey? Yes, I do. Should the plane have been shot down? I would say no. For whatever reason they were in Turkey, I bet they wouldn't have done an attack on Turkish forces in Turkey, and they would have went back over to the Syrian side soon enough. So they shouldn't have pulled the trigger. And I don't even like Obama's response here. I don't like Putin's response, where he's like, okay, we're never going to tolerate a crime like this, meaning, hey, we might escalate, we might fight. But I don't even like Obama's response, where he's like, Turkey has a right to defend its territory. You're dragging the U.S. further into it. Now, I understand that according to the treaties, you know, you really have no choice, and the U.S. is, by definition, now involved in this because we have to back up other NATO allies, yada, yada, yada. But I always, whenever I read shit like this, I always think of, like, you know, people in Nebraska or Kentucky or California who are in the military who could be deployed to fight in a hot war against Russia. You're really going to do that because Turkey shot down a Russian plane when they probably shouldn't have? You know, I was thinking the same thing when Vladimir Putin annexed part of Crimea, and he's like, mine. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to the American people and say, I want you to go fight for the Crimeans who you didn't hear of until 8 minutes ago? I can't ask people to do that because the only time I think we should use the military is to defend against imminent attack against the nation. I believe in using force for self-defense. In cases of genocide, we go through the UN and we all do it together, and that's fine. But outside of that, the only time I want to use direct U.S. military force is for self-defense, and the way that we have these treaties structured, you know, we could be dragged into World War III as a result of this. And it's something that we need to keep our eye on because it's very serious, and you have to hope that they come to some sort of diplomatic solution because it's not pretty right now. I mean, you have Vladimir Putin and his top officials. There was going to be a meeting between Turkey and Russia soon coming up. They canceled immediately when this happened. They called a NATO emergency meeting, and, I mean, they're going to do their best to de-escalate the situation. But this doesn't look good, man. So we got to hope that people keep level heads and they stay intelligent as they figure out a way to resolve this in a sane, humanitarian, common sense way. All right, next. All right, I want to give you guys a breakdown of the state of the presidential race as it is right now. I'm going to give you the Democratic side and the Republican side. And I want to tell you who I think is really, that's not the best way to phrase this, who are the people that it's their race to lose on both sides? So, let's dive into it here. We have Bobby Jindal dropped out. I don't even know if I mentioned that. I should have mentioned it, and I should have mocked him, but I didn't. Bobby Jindal dropped out. Rick Santorum is at point. He will be dropping out soon. He actually won Iowa the last time around, but he ain't going to win Dickie McGee's act this time around, so he might want to fall back and just drop out now and save face. George Pataki's at 0.8%. George Pataki blocked me on Twitter. Fuck him. Apparently he got tired of me pointing out in funny ways how irrelevant he is. He will be dropping out soon as well. Lindsey Graham, 0.8%. He'll be dropping out soon as well. It turns out when you call for all-out war all the time and that's the only thing you ever have to say, people don't like that very much. Rand Paul's at 2.5%. I hope he doesn't drop out soon, but he might. He needs a little bit of a bump here by either another good debate performance or some kind of miracle. I wish Rand Paul was leading on the Republican side, but he's not. We live in the Twilight Zone and not the world where the people who make more sense on that team end up doing well. John Kasich's at 2.8%, hanging in there. He's a dark horse candidate. I don't think he's necessarily going to drop out soon, but you never know. Christie's at 3%. His brand of Republican at this time in history should be more popular than, you know, the religious theocrats and the crazy people, but they're not. I mean, he's a corporate sellout, but at least his talking points make more sense. It's about fiscal responsibility and the deficit and stuff like that. But they were never able to get over his hug of Obama during Hurricane Sandy. So he's kind of Fucksville here, but I don't know when he's going to drop out. Huckabee, 3.3%. Fiorina, 3.5%. Another dark horse. Bush, 5.5%. I mean, I guess he's hanging in there, even though he is horrible at politics. He really sucks at this. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He, at first, everybody thought he's the smart Bush, but then as time went by, everybody realized, oh, no, he's not. He actually may be dumber than George W. Bush, and he's certainly worse at campaigning. Cruz is at 11.3%. That's scary as fuck. Rubio, 12.5%. He's the person who's the establishment candidate through and through. You have Carson 19.8% and Trump 27.5%, so Trump pulling away from Carson again when they were even for a while. All right, so whose race is it to lose? The answer is, it is Donald Trump's race to lose. Now, he's a crazy person, but his brand of non-politician is what's craving right now. There's no doubt about that. They're sick and tired of the establishment, but you never know that because the establishment fallback always seems to be the last option that everybody resorts to. Every election, especially on the right, you see them go from person to person to person to person. Last time it was fucking Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, and then boom, finally they ended on Mitt Romney. So that's why number two on the Republican side, even though Ben Carson is literally number two according to the polls, I'm going to go with Marco Rubio because, you know, history shows that they do at times just revert back to the establishment candidate, and they have so much more money than everybody else that that helps them tremendously as well. Somebody like Marco Rubio is backed by billionaires. Not that Trump doesn't have money. He does. But Rubio's got the backing of the real Republican establishment, so he's closely number two there. And then everybody else is largely irrelevant. I hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, Bush was the establishment candidate. They're fleeing from him because he sucks. You got Fiorina and Kasich had a shot. Even Christie had a shot for a while in terms of he could get the establishment backing and stuff. But that looks like the rest of them is just a matter of time, tick-tock. You know, some of them might hang in there until Iowa, but after that there's going to be a hell of a lot of dropouts. And then switching over to the Democratic side here, you have Martin O'Malley at 4.4%, you have Bernie Sanders at 30.2%, and you have Hillary Clinton at 55.8%. Now, that actually sounds like bad for Bernie, but the reality is he's closed that gap tremendously. I mean, there was a time when that gap was, 40 points, 50 points? But it seems like the more time goes by, he chips away and chips away and chips away. Now, Martin O'Malley, I mean, step aside, son. www.stepasidesun.com. He's too fake politician-y. His policies aren't really that bad. I don't know his real commitment to the policies that he espouses. But his policies aren't bad, but he's got that typical sleazy politician look to him and way of talking and rhythm and cadence, and it just looks fake. It doesn't look genuine. He doesn't have the name recognition of either of the other two. Hillary obviously has the default celebrity name recognition. Bernie's got to chip away to try to climb that ladder. He's not as known, especially by people who don't follow politics regularly. But is there a run from Bernie Sanders still left? The answer to that is absolutely positively yes. I'm not saying he's going to win, but he certainly has a shot. Now, why is that? Because when you look at the polls, it actually is true that President Obama at this point was doing worse than Bernie Sanders is at this point. And, of course, Obama, needless to say, overtook Hillary Clinton. So if he's already doing better than Obama at this point, why couldn't he stay on the same trajectory here? He can. Possibly he will. I mean, if there's anybody who could do it, he's running a fantastic campaign. He's really buckling down and focusing on the issues and saying all the right things. And if there's anything that could, you know, capture the hearts and minds of everybody on the Democratic side, it's that. You know, I mean, he has some things going against him. Let's not kid ourselves here. Like I said, Hillary Clinton's a bigger celebrity. Bernie Sanders is a really old Jewish atheist dude. So, you know, it's hard. It's going to be hard, but he certainly has a shot. And Hillary Clinton is the Democratic machine and the behemoth with the establishment backing her. Plus, she has that default name recognition. So as long as she keeps playing the Me Too game with Bernie, it looks like it's going to be her. But we're going to have to wait and see, and all the Sanders supporters need to buckle down more here. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes out from here. But obviously, it's Hillary's race to lose, and we got to see how it plays out. All right, now, let me give you guys Killer Mike. I fucking love this story. All right. Rapper Killer Mike endorsed Bernie Sanders for president, and he did a tremendous job. He did an awesome rally with him here. Let's listen to some of his speech.
today is the Martin King post the Washington March. Martin King present the war on poverty. Martin King against the war machine that uses your sons and your nephews to go to other lands and murder. I'm talking about a revolutionary. I have no time in my short 40 years on this earth to relive the Reagan years. I have no time. I have no desire to see us elect our own Margaret Thatcher. I am here as a proponent for a political revolution that says health care is a right of every citizen. I'm here because working class and poor people deserve a chance at economic freedom, and yes, if you work 40 hours a week, you should not be in poverty. That's why I'm here. I didn't come here to lollygag because I rap. This could be y'all last time seeing me because I got tours to go on, I got jets to fly on, and I ain't lying on. But while I'm here, I have to tell you that in my heart of hearts, I truly believe that Senator Bernie Sanders is the right man to lead this country. And I believe it because he, unlike any other candidate, said, I would like to restore the Voting Rights Act. He, unlike any other candidate, said, I wish to end this illegal war on drugs that disproportionately targets minorities and poor. Unlike any other candidate in my life, he says that education should be free for every citizen of this country. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I'm here to tell you, stay encouraged, stay invigorated, stay bold, stay confronting bullshit at every turn. Make sure that wherever you go, you take the name, the ideas, the philosophy, and the ideology of Bernie Sanders there, and you make sure when you leave, they are on fire because they have felt the burn. I have a line from one of my raps, and I'm going to get out of your way. I have said in many a rap, I don't trust the church or the government, a Democrat, Republican, a pope or a bishop or those other men. But after spending five hours with someone who has spent the last 50 years radically fighting for your rights and mine, I can tell you that I am very proud tonight to announce the next president of the United States, Senator Bernie Sanders. Everyone give him a round of applause.
That's fucking awesome. I loved every word of that. Now, what's hilarious is that if you listen to some of the pundits, they'll say, oh, there's no way, Bernie Sanders can't ever win the nomination, and the reason is he's not going to get enough votes among women, and he's not going to get enough votes among blacks. And that's it. You know, what are you going to do? He's very popular among young millennial white men, but that's it. What are you going to do? But the thing is, Bernie Sanders, as Killer Mike put so beautifully, actually cares about the issues. You know who else happens to care about the issues? Women. You know who else happens to care about the issues? Black people. So it's not like, I mean, what the fuck, do you think we have no minds? If anything, the progressive base cares more about this stuff than anybody else in American politics. We're not just going to go to Hillary Clinton like a bug to one of those bug lights. You must vote Hillary Clinton. We know her already. That's not how it works. We're going to hear you out. We're going to listen. And, you know, perhaps if you make better arguments and you lay out more substantive policies, we'll vote for you. Now, I'm not saying he's definitely going to win, but does he have a shot? Fuck yeah, he has a shot. And remember, when you track, according to the polls, Bernie Sanders is actually doing better right now against Hillary Clinton than Barack Obama did at this point against Hillary Clinton. So he's already doing better than the guy who overtook her and became president of the United States of America. And you're to tell me that, no, he's got no shot. No shot whatsoever. All right, you keep saying that, man. You keep saying that. We're going to find out. You know, people get it. Everybody's seeing it. That's why, for example, and I can go on and on all day here, but Bernie recently gained 11 points on Hillary with women. I'm telling you, the more he talks, the more people hear what he has to say, the more people are going to go, I like that. And Killer Mike brought up MLK and went into detail there and said, I'm not just talking about MLK when it comes to racial justice. I'm talking about MLK focusing on all forms of justice when it comes to war and the military-industrial complex and how he was against that. I think he said something like the biggest purveyor of violence around the world today is my own government. That was Martin Luther King, the one who sanitized through history now. And everybody says, oh, it's only he only preached nonviolence and he only cared about racial issues. Not true. He cared about health care. He cared about the minimum wage. He cared about poverty. He was assassinated when standing up for union workers. Okay, and Killer Mike brought up war, health care, jobs, poverty, and the war on drugs. And what did he say? Bernie Sanders is the guy who has consistently fought on all of these fronts. Absolute fact, and we need to get the word out there more. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump spoke at a rally in Columbus, Ohio, and brought up the worst parts of the Bush administration, and he loves them. Then we got Bill O'Reilly standing up to Donald Trump and Lindsey Graham with the worst proposal you've ever heard for the war on terror. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Mitch. All right. Welcome back, guys. Let's get right to Donald Trump and what he's up to now. Got a few things here. Donald Trump spoke at a rally in Columbus, Ohio, and he praised torture, the torture of the Bush administration. So he said the following, quote, "Would I approve waterboarding? You bet your ass I would, in a heartbeat. I would approve more than that. It works. And if it doesn't work, they deserve it anyway for what they did to us." Oh, boy. Come on, really? Who is they, Donald? That's what he said here. It works, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter if it doesn't work either. They deserve it anyway for what they did to us. But who is they? Isn't that the point here? Who is they? They is Osama bin Laden. He did 9/11. Okay, right. Well, he's dead. They said they was Saddam Hussein. It wasn't Saddam Hussein, but he's also dead and gone. He said they is al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Well, al-Qaeda's been wiped out in Afghanistan. We did that almost immediately after the invasion there in 2001. But then they say, okay, let's stay there and fight the Taliban. But wait, the Taliban didn't actually do 9/11 against us. Who cares? They're close enough. Just fight them anyway. So, but wait, this, you keep moving the goalposts. Who is they? Who are you referring to? So let's say he's referring to ISIS. Okay, you're referring to ISIS. Well, how exactly are you going to capture them? How exactly do you know that they have other information of inevitable plots, or are you just going to make it up for every single one that you see? And therefore, it's okay when we violate rights every now and then because, you know, they had it coming anyway. But isn't that what everybody's argument is whenever they violate somebody's rights? That, I mean, well, we had to do it. Well, you know, didn't we put to death Japanese soldiers when they waterboarded our guys in World War II? And by the way, you know, if there was ever, we had to do it. I mean, the Japanese soldiers could have easily said, we had to spread the information. You were going to fucking nuke us and kill all the civilians. So I had to spread the information. I was a spy. What was I going to do? Not try to protect people when you nuked us? So if there was ever an argument of, you know, hey, we had to do the thing that we did, nope, is that you can never waterboard. Therefore, when the Japanese military waterboarded our soldiers, well, you know, death for you. But when we do it, oh, no problem. It's okay. Let it slide. Now, the problem is, Donald, that at Guantanamo Bay, the they was not the correct they. It was innocent people. Again, you have, like, people need to be up on all the information that's come out since the war on terror began to understand why liberals get so mad about this. Because the Bush administration made a deal with the government in Pakistan and the government in Afghanistan, excuse me. And they said, all right, you guys send us people in al-Qaeda. You guys send us jihadists. And then, you know, we just got attacked. We're mad after 9/11, understandably so. So we're going to lock them up in this place, Guantanamo Bay, and we're going to exact our revenge and get more information and stuff. Well, it turns out that the governments of Pakistan and Afghanistan simply went out and rounded up people they didn't like. They didn't get jihadists. They got people who were against their own governments, and they shipped them to the U.S. We tortured them, and then it turns out they had nothing to do with 9/11. They had nothing to do with even jihadism. They were just anti-Pakistani government protesters and anti-Afghanistan government protesters. So this is what happens whenever you open the door to torture. It's never like, okay, we allowed it and we only did it in those ticking time bomb scenarios where it worked out perfectly well. You open the door and then you have idiots like George W. Bush and Dick Cheney running the government, and then they go way too far with it, and it's just like Donald Trump said, I go further than waterboarding. Well, what did we do? Well, we did go further. We did anal feeding, which isn't even a thing when you talk to doctors. So basically anal rape. State-sanctioned anal rape. That was one of the things we did. Hypothermia torture. We threw water on a guy, left him in the cell overnight, came back in. What happened? He died. And by the way, that guy was totally innocent. They admit in the CIA torture report at least 20% of the people were innocent. At least 20% of the people we torture had nothing to do with any terrorism whatsoever. See, this is a problem. Due process is there not for shits and giggles. It's there so we make sure that we only punish the right people and we only put in jail the right people. People act like, well, due process is just this minor inconvenience that you can ignore whenever it gets in the way. No! The whole reason it's there is to make sure that we do our best to limit mistakes and only get the right people. But guys like Trump, they don't care about that. Why? Because Donald Trump, he's an authoritarian. People have been calling him a fascist. That's actually correct, given the policies he's been discussing for the past week or so, whether it's giving Muslims ID cards or citing literal neo-Nazi statistics that are totally made up, or when he launched his campaigns. And the Mexicans, I assume some are good people, but they're rapists, they're criminals. I mean, look at what we're getting at here, man. There are multiple protesters now at this point who've gotten beaten up at Donald Trump rallies, and Trump's been like, well, maybe they deserved it. One of Trump's, his head spokesperson for his campaign, well, I mean, what are you going to do? He spoke up. He spoke out of line. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? There was one story of people who assaulted, I think it was a homeless guy who was Hispanic, and as they assaulted him, they were mentioning Donald Trump. Like, Trump was right, beating up this poor guy. And then when Trump was asked, he's like, those people just love their country, and they want to make it better. Are you fucking kidding me? And now they're out there, and Jeb Bush did the same thing. Yeah, I'd bring it back. Donald Trump, yeah, torture, waterboard, I'd go further than that. They deserve anyway. Who is they? How do you know you always get the right people? If you're going to disregard the system by which we find the right people, how do you know you're going to get the right people? You don't know you're going to get the right people. So what's going to happen is you're going to torture the wrong people, and then that's going to increase radicalization. I love that irony, too. They go, we have to do it to keep the nation safe. And then fast forward years later, what do they say? Oh, we can't talk about what happened there because that'll make the nation less safe. You told me that was necessary to keep the nation safe. Now you're saying, as a matter of fact, that made the nation less safe. So you're admitting that the original argument you gave us was total bullshit, and that the effective result of what was done at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere, it will indeed increase radicalization and create more terrorists. No. Not my government, not in my name. This is my tax dollars funding this stuff, man. And we got people in the U.S. wondering out loud about violating international law. Could you imagine if any other government... I mean, we've used the argument to topple governments that, what are we going to do? They violated international law. It was time for regime change. So can somebody now use that argument against us? Can Greenland say, you know, we are just going to send in some special forces, knock out Obama, knock out the head of the CIA, and we're going to take over the government? Why? I mean, they're not abiding by international law. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? We've used that argument for other people. Yeah, they violated international law, time for regime change. For us, we violate international law? Shut the fuck up. Doesn't apply to us. You want to know why? We're the good guys by definition. And that's the way that Trump thinks. So if you're the good guy by definition, then your actions no longer matter because you've already decided I'm the good guy. So if you do wrong actions, well, the ends justify the means. It was in the service of the greater good, the broader good, because we're the good guys. So we can torture. We can invade countries illegally. We can restrict everybody's civil rights. We can spy on everybody. We can get rid of due process. We can throw away the Constitution. And it's all right because I already said we're the good guys. No, it's not all right. If you act like that, your actions are what matters in this world. And if you violate your principles and your values when the going gets tough, you don't really believe in them. Next. All right, now Bill O'Reilly is somehow going to look like the good guy here a little bit. Bill O'Reilly had on Donald Trump, and he confronted him, believe it or not, over his racist tweet. Let's watch.
The liberal media and the Democratic Party in general trying to paint you as a racist. Are you aware of that?
I think so, but I think people know better than that.
All right.
I'm probably the least racist person on earth.
Well, I've known you a long time,
and I
never saw any racism from you. However, when you tweet out a thing, and this bothered me, I got to tell you. You tweeted out that whites killed by blacks, these are statistics you picked up from somewhere, at a rate of 81%. And that's totally wrong. Whites killed by blacks is 15%. Yet you tweeted it was 81%. Now,
Bill, I didn't tweet. I retweeted somebody that was supposedly an expert, and it was also a radio show.
Why do you want to be in that
zone? Hey, Bill, am I going to check every statistic? I've got millions and millions of people.
You're a presidential contender.
I have millions of people. You know what? Fine. But this came out of radio shows and everything else.
Oh, come on. Radio shows?
I didn't say... Excuse me. All it was is a retweet. It wasn't from me, and it did. It come out, came out of a radio show and other places because you see all the names.
Look, you know I'm looking out for you, right? You know that? You know I'm looking out for you. I look out for every honest politician. I don't care what party they're in. Don't do this. Don't put your name on stuff like this because it makes the other side, it gives them stuff to tell the ill-informed voter that you're a racist. I mean, just hand him the platter.
This was a retweet. I'm sure you're looking out for me.
Yeah,
everybody
right.
is, right?
Yeah.
This was a retweet. This
yeah.
was a retweet.
All right, whatever it is.
And it came from
you
sources
shouldn't tweet
that are
ever.
Very credible.
You shouldn't be tweeting. Don't tweet. Give it up for Lent.
Sure.
Lent is coming soon.
Okay,
give it up.
There are so many parts in there that are fascinating. I mean, at the end, it's like O'Reilly's prodding him. Donald, come on. You have to not tweet what's on your mind. You must hide your racism, your bigotry, and your xenophobia. Come on, man. Don't tweet. Put it down. Don't tweet. Don't tweet. You're just giving it to the other side on a platter. You're letting them know that you're racist. You're not supposed to let them know. You got to, like, you know, mask it a little bit. Come up with some creative arguments to dance around it. When Bill O'Reilly is the one who's more sane than you on the issue of race. Good googly moogly. We've gone too far in America. And I love how he's saying it now as if it's like this new, oh, goodness, it looks like you may have said something racist. As if we haven't heard Trump saying these things since day one, literally. When he launched his campaign on day one, what did he say? You know, Mexicans, they're criminals. They're rapists. I assume some of them are good people. So he didn't say some of them are criminals and rapists. No, he said, I assume some are good people. Other than that, I mean, they're criminals, they're rapists. So he flipped it. Oh, God. And back then, what was Bill O'Reilly doing? Am I going to cover those comments? No. But then he'll turn around and make a mountain out of a molehill when a Democrat says something relatively benign. I mean, the Bill O'Reilly 101 here. My favorite part was at the beginning, I'm probably the least racist person on earth. That's such a classic Trump response. Hey, you said something racist here. No, not only did I not, I'm probably the least racist person on earth. Can't you say no, I'm not. I'm the least racist person on earth. And then, what am I going to check every statistic? What do you think, I'm running for president or something? Shut up, man. Come on. Dude, yeah, you are running for president. And you like he's acting like he didn't retweet it. We saw you retweeted it. He's like, I didn't tweet it. I retweeted it. As if that makes it better. Like, oh, I didn't go to Google, find the graphic, put it up, and it was wrong. Somebody sent it to me, and I said it's probably true, and I retweeted it. So it's better? No, it's not better. Why would that make it better? He's so amazing because he's being slippery here and evasive with not even really being slippery and evasive. He's just, you know, classic Donald Trump, assert shit, and then berate people who disagree with you, even though, you know, what you just asserted is absolutely ludicrous. But, I mean, when even Bill O'Reilly's like, dude. Because Bill O'Reilly's gone on rants before that you watch and you go, kind of racist. But he's looking at these stats and going, not good. And the source. Notice how the source didn't come up. You remember what the source is? Quite literally, a neo-Nazi Twitter account. So we finally figured out what it takes to get Fox News to go, you went a little too far. And this is it right here. All right, next. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham went on Greg Gutfeld's show on Fox News, and he laid out his foreign policy. And I think it's quite literally the most hawkish foreign policy I've ever heard.
So I blame Obama for the rise of ISIL, not anyone else. But on our side of the aisle, we've had people who, acting like we're fighting a crime, not a war, that want to take our ability to detect the next attack, take our intelligence community and make it dark, not realizing the only way to defend America is pick up the attack before it happens. So we go from one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me the only way we get intel now is after the crime. We were able to...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Paris raid occurred because of the Paris attack.
Yeah, it's not a crime. Okay, I've been a military lawyer for 33 years. We're in a state of war with ISIL and other radical Islamic groups. I've got an authorization to use military force that I'll introduce the week after Thanksgiving that says we can go any place on the planet, no limits on time, geography, or means to destroy ISIL. They represent the same threat to our homeland that Al-Qaeda did after 9/11. So I want to be at war with them. They're at war with us. I want to monitor in a constitutionally sound way activities that would be picked up to prevent the next attack. I'm not trying to listen in on people's phone calls. I'm trying to gather intelligence to prevent an attack on our nation, and we have a constitutional process to do that. But I'm fighting a war, and many people on our side are fighting a crime. There's a big difference.
So you want to try, again, the George W. Bush approach. You know, if only we had some recent evidence of how successful that plan and that strategy is. Guys, it objectively made the problem worse. We tried that approach. That's the neocon approach 101. You broke Iraq with a sledgehammer. You broke the Middle East with a sledgehammer. And then this rose up. This is the monstrosity that rose up out of the dictator vacuum. So we tried your approach. Your approach has made it worse. But did you catch what he said in the middle there? Because it's unreal. I've never heard anything like that before in my life. He says, I want an authorization for military force. I want Congress to approve war for every place on the planet. Every place on the planet. See, usually when you go through Congress to get war declared, because constitutionally you have to do that, although sometimes we skirt that nowadays because, of course, but usually when you do that, you say, all right, I'm going to declare war against Iraq. So here's my proposal, allow me to do it, and then boom, you go ahead and you do it. Now we're at the point where he's like, every country, anywhere in the world where I smell radical Islam, I get to go in there and just snuff it out and use military force. Do you have any idea how many countries we'd be fighting against? I mean, there are some, and it depends to what extent you mean radical, but there are some very fundamentalist Muslims in Europe. Can you just invade there whenever you want? You know, just set up a fort in the middle of Brussels and say, all right, we're good. Now we're good. And you want to do that everywhere. So all throughout Europe, if you want to invade and use the U.S. military, go right ahead. All throughout the Middle East, if you want to do that, fuck, you want to go to Australia and do it? Go right ahead. Go to Australia and do it. You want to go into Russia? Yeah, I bet Vladimir Putin, if you go into Chechnya, I bet he'll take kindly to that, wouldn't he? You're not going to create more problems than you're solving, are you? Now, guys, this is not me arguing that, dude, we should do absolutely nothing and nobody around the world should do anything on this issue. I gave you in detail directly after the Paris attacks what I would do in response to it. I have no problem with France and Russia leading the way doing targeted strikes against ISIS. I have no problem with us going through the proper legal proceedings and using special forces and giving humanitarian aids and possibly some weapons assistance to the Kurds, for example, mending fences with Iran because they're the leading fighters against ISIS, so mending the fences with the Shias in order to back them in their fight against the Sunnis. So there's a million and one things I would do that are intelligent and targeted in responding to ISIS. The last thing anybody should do, because you'd be giving them what they want and you'd make the problem worse, is to say, I am going to declare war everywhere on the planet. And then laughably, you say, well, you know, but we're also going to coincide with the Constitution. But that in and of itself is fundamentally unconstitutional. That's obscene. War everywhere on the planet? I mean, it's bad enough that right now we violate it because we're doing wars in some places and we just pretend like it's not war. We play these semantic games. For example, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. We're doing a drone campaign there where we kill 90% the wrong people and we go, well, that's not war. We just do a little drone strike here and there. No big deal. We don't need to go through Congress to get approval for that. Of course you do. Of course you do. Can you imagine China starts droning Alabama and they're like, it's not war. We just saw sovereign citizens or a KKK cell. We had to bomb it. What are you doing? Not war. Of course it's war. We ignore international law whenever the fuck we feel like it. And the main thing is he does want to set it up as a clash of civilizations. Us versus them, and we're going to get them anywhere on the planet, as opposed to the more intelligent approach, which is targeted, specific, and yes, treating it from our perspective more like a crime problem because, you know, there's no, even according to our own intelligence agencies, there's no direct threat to us at the moment. And it's certainly not coming from a nation, and if any nation, it'd be Saudi Arabia. But that's the idea, is you do treat it targeted like it's a crime, and you want to have other nations, or you want to have other groups of people, like the Kurds or the Shia militias, lead the fight. Even if you want to have France or Russia lead the fight, fine. But we've tried, and we've failed, so empirically, that's not the right strategy. But I know Lindsey Graham can't get that through his head, because his idea, no matter what, is always more war. And in this case, he's saying quite literally, let's declare war everywhere on Earth. All right, now, let me go to, I got one more here on foreign policy. Then we'll take a break and I'll come back and I get an awesome final 30 minutes for you guys. Former CIA intelligence officer Michael Scheuer went on CNN to discuss ISIS strategy, and it got ugly.
I read your blog, as you know, and it seems to me that you've presented this as an all-in or all-out proposition. I know what all-out looks like. What does all-in look like to Michael Scheuer?
All-in to me, I wrote this week, would be to take out every piece of infrastructure, hospitals, universities, irrigation systems that make it impossible for the Islamic State to raise money to provide electricity, sanitation, potable water, do exactly what we did to the Germans. This is finally something that our military can do. It can't defeat these people on the ground, but it can destroy buildings and facilities.
But, Michael, we don't have the stomach for that. I mean, you've advocated not only going after hospitals, but also universities. Do you think that the Western world, Americans in particular, would stand by for the film footage that would be shown on CNN and elsewhere of the so-called innocent civilian death count?
Well, I don't know if they would. They should. Well, what's the difference? They're not Americans. We're defending ourselves.
Oh, come on. It's fine to kill innocent civilians when they're not Americans. And then he said, and we're defending ourselves. No, but you just said kill the innocent civilians. So you're not defending yourself. They're innocent civilians. You just said it. So, well, they're not Americans. So what is it? Oh, my God, man. He said take out infrastructure, hospitals, universities, irrigation, sanitation, and everything. Guys, but understand this is not a conventional enemy, as we've discussed a trillion times. If you can't see that, you're fucking blind at this point. ISIS has swept into certain parts of Iraq, certain parts of Syria, and they take over places that are civilian populations, and they say, all right, we're the new government here. So people are there that have never done an act of terrorism, have never been violent against anybody. Now, they may have some beliefs that you and I hate, and rightly, and they're ultra-conservative compared to your average person in the West. Fine, understandable. But, so you want to kill them because they happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they were overtaken by ISIS. So, you want to kill civilians, innocent civilians, because you're so convinced we're the good guy. But then wait a second. I thought actions are what matters in this world. So if the act of killing an innocent civilian is wrong, then why isn't it wrong when we do it just as much so as it's wrong when ISIS does it, just as much as it's wrong if Vladimir Putin does it, just as much as it's wrong if anybody does it? No, but see, this is why this way of thinking is so perverse, is that people have actually convinced themselves, no, when we do it, it's okay, because we mean well. No, but you just said kill innocent civilians. So what if I were to tell you that that act in and of itself is immoral and wrong and unjustified, and that makes you a bad guy? That makes you a terrorist. If you're saying I'm cool with killing innocent civilians, well, so is ISIS. You have something where you agree with them. And you say, well, my philosophy, which backs it up, is better than their philosophy of backing it up. Well, that's an interesting thing that you can share with an Iraqi grandma who you just blew into smithereens. That's an interesting thing to share with toddlers and women and children and people who never did anything wrong and they just happen to be born in the wrong place at the wrong time. No, again, beliefs are vitally important. Absolutely nobody would deny that. But actions are more important because somebody could be a racist, but we don't throw them in jail if they're just a racist. We disagree with you. We hate it, but you're a racist. It becomes against the law if you take your racist beliefs and then you go on to lynch somebody and kill somebody. That's when it's a problem. So you, Michael Schroeder, you don't have to like anybody in the Middle East. You can hate all the civilians. You can hate all the Muslims, whatever. But it becomes a crime, a war crime, and you become a grotesque moral abomination when you say, no, I'm going to now take that and just kill everybody because they happen to be in a place where ISIS came in and took over. We have to be more smart than this, man. We have to realize that this is going to give ISIS their best recruitment tool. Let's say we did this. I mean, everybody in the world is going to turn against the U.S. because then they'd be able to say, no, you don't. Who the fuck are you? You don't have any moral high ground at all. And unfortunately, we're already at that point in many respects because we tortured so many innocent people. We did hypothermia torture, anal rape, among other things. We invaded the wrong country and ended up killing hundreds of thousands of civilians. We're still engaged in military conflicts in 7 different countries. But this would make it so that, oh my God, wave the white flag. There's no more debate. There's no more conversation. I don't want to pick sides in a world where everybody agrees you kill civilians if you feel like you have to. Well, every petty dictator ever, every ideological grotesque group, whether it's jihadist or otherwise, has always said, when we do it, it's different. No, it's not different when any of you do it. Bright moral red lines. You never kill innocent civilians, ever. You should be targeted in the way that you fight against evil, against bad groups. Doesn't mean you're a pacifist. Doesn't mean you never respond under any circumstances. That's a caricature of what I believe and what the majority of liberals believe. What we believe is you're targeted, you're specific, you're precise in your response, and you're intelligent in your response. You don't use the exact same tactics of the terrorists and then say, but when we do it, it's better. No, if when they do it, they're terrorists, it's also the case when you do it, you're a terrorist. All right. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I got a bunch of stuff to get to. We got Glenn Beck, we got Sam Harris, we got California textbooks, and we got drugs, bitch. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back. Whoopsies. Premature.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. 30 minutes left in the week because I'm on break
for vacation and stuff. All right. I keep saying vacation when the word is Thanksgiving. I'm on vacation for Thanksgiving. All right. Glenn Beck is going to make an outrageous assertion about universities and Black Lives Matter. Let's listen.
I'm going to show you what ISIS has said to people in the United States. This is what you need to do. And whether the universities know it or not, they are working together, hand in hand, with ISIS. For any millennial that will sit at your Thanksgiving table, I'm going to give you information that you need to get into their hands. And they're going to call you an old fuddy-dummy. They're going to call you all kinds of names. But I'm going to give you the information that comes from ISIS itself. And I want you to have that at your dinner table. So when they sit down at your dinner table and they start talking about all the strife and all of the things that they're taking and they're fixing with Black Lives Matter and everything else, I want you to pull this out and say, this comes from ISIS. This is an ISIS document. Whether you know it or not, you're working hand in hand with ISIS. Congratulations on that. Inspire magazine, in a nutshell, and I'm going to come back to this, gives a few points on what they believe that people should do. If you are in league with ISIS, if you want them to succeed, here's what you should do. You should, and I'm quoting, exploit racial issues. Encourage African Americans to form protest groups. And then encourage assassination of racist politicians. We are headed for 1968. They, in this magazine, talk about how to pick the right target, how to make your own bombs, which weapons you should pick. I don't want to give you more information than that.
Universities and Black Lives Matter, working hand-in-hand with ISIS, whether or not they realize that they are. Why? Because Al-Qaeda put in their magazine something that said something about what they should do. Right, and I'm sure that all the Black Lives Matter leaders are sitting down and they're going over it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that they implement the plan of the jihadists here in America. Right. I saw D-Ray McKesson tweeting about that earlier, one of the guys who's the head of Black Lives Matter. He's like, you know, there's some good pointers here from the guys who want to behead the infidels and the apostates and who love doing terrorism. No, they didn't say that. They're not going to say that. You're trying to make a connection where there is none. You know how Black Lives Matter, the actual movement and the power structure and the leaders are going to respond to this? They're not. Because they don't care what ISIS says, because ISIS is a fucking terrorist organization that they despise as much as anybody else. Okay, now I caught a lot of shit yesterday because I did a segment where I call out a white student union, which now exists in Illinois. Yeah, what a radical position I took by saying, I'm not sure this white student union is a good idea. By the way, I'm not saying they shouldn't be allowed to create it. You can create it, but don't get mad when people point out the shit you say and it's racist. Like, if you call Black Lives Matter a terrorist group, that's not true. Name one person they've killed. That's right, I can't hear you. So that's not correct, and when you go through the rest of the page, and they're quoting parts of American History X where Edward Norton is a white supremacist, and they're quoting it like, yeah, that's true, well, then I know that page actually is racist, and they're on the record as saying, look, yeah, this is kind of what we believe. I have a close friend of mine is a former neo-Nazi, and he said, yeah, actually, it was the movie American History X where, you know, me and a bunch of my friends, we had turned to
to white supremacy movements as a result of that. Well, here they have on this white student union page that, and people are like, no, it's the same as black pride movements. White pride is the same as black pride. But that's not true. Look at the fucking history of it. White pride is tied to the KKK and neo-Nazis and hate crimes and terrorism. Black pride is tied to the New Black Panthers and civil rights movements, which are trying to get equality and stop oppression, where the white pride movements were trying to perpetuate oppression. You can deny it, but it's true. So suck it up if you don't like it. But people say, well, you know, Kyle, you didn't call out the PC garbage enough. Bullshit. I've done segments where I call out the stupid speech codes on campus and the craziness over gender pronouns. I did a segment praising Bill Maher when Bill Maher went after the faux outrage over Halloween costumes. And am I with you when Black Lives Matter goes too far? Like when they had violent rhetoric at protests? Yes, I'm totally against that. I've discussed that at length on the show. Am I against it when there was an example of somebody at a university, this goofy, stupid professor, who was berating the media and saying, get out of here if you're not going to cover the story in our way. Am I against that? Fuck yeah, I'm against that. Censoring the media is never okay, no matter where it comes from. I'm against trigger warnings. I think that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Grow the fuck up. I don't care if your feelings are hurt. At university, your feelings should be hurt because you're supposed to debate ideas. And I don't care about safe spaces. I don't want all black segregated safe spaces, and if people in BLM call for that, they're fucking wrong. That's fundamentally anti what the civil rights movement was about. That was about multiculturalism and integration and coming together, not separating and segregating yourself. So to the extent that people in the movement are for that, I'm against it. But here's the deal. Most critics of the movement don't know what the fuck they're talking about, and they make shit up. Here's a perfect example of it right here with Glenn Beck. ISIS, they don't even realize it, but they're working hand in hand with ISIS. No, they're not. So I'm going to give you Black Lives Matter's official goals so that you know what they stand for. First of all, they want to end broken windows policing. This is from them. The group itself released their official policy proposals, and they say, this is what we're fighting for. On this front, and this is why I defend the group, they're right. If people in the group, individuals, do bad things and support bad things, am I against it? Yes, I just told you, and I'll explain it over again if you'd like me to. I absolutely am against it. But the overall movement is based on this, and the overall movement is correct in what they're pushing for. End broken windows policing, which legitimizes treating poor people and minorities negatively, and it's a green light to crack down on those communities more so than you crack down on other communities. Community oversight of the police to stop them from using excessive force. I'm for that. Limiting the use of force and making it so that the first thing you default to is not necessarily your gun and you shoot an unarmed person. You use a taser or something like that instead. Then independent investigations and prosecutions. So oftentimes in different scenarios, you'll have a cop do something bad, and then they ask that cop's friend, who's the prosecutor, to crack down on that cop and go after that cop and make a case against that cop. And they almost always throw the case. So Black Lives Matter saying, no, we want independent prosecutors from the federal government when something happens at the state level or at a local level. Most reasonable thing I've ever heard. They want community representation in police departments so that you have people from the community policing the community so they're more likely to be kind and not immediately resort to force. They want body cameras for the officers. Studies show that cops do much less abuse when they know they're recorded all the time. Totally for that. They want to redo the training so, again, they don't immediately go to violence. Right now, all the physical aspects of being a cop get more time in training than de-escalating tactics. They want to train that. They want to retrain on that, and they're totally right. They want to end for-profit policing, only the biggest no-brainer ever. We have such a terrible, perverse incentive structure in the U.S. If people make money, the more people are locked up. So what's going to happen? The lobbyists are going to press Congress to come up with more laws to lock more people up because they make more money for it. And demilitarization of the cops. They're not a military. Don't treat them like a military. They can still have guns, but you got to wind down and get rid of some of the more ridiculous things like the tanks they use and shit like that. And they want fair police union contracts, which don't protect them at all costs, even when they do something horrifically wrong. This is what the movement's about, and this is why I support the movement. Don't fall into the dumbass right-wing trap where they'll show you one person who's affiliated with the movement, who does something fucked up and wrong, and admittedly wrong, just a bad thing. Like, if they're actually saying, oh my God, we need to be segregated from white people because all white people are bad or whatever. Yeah, that's stupid and that's dumb and that's wrong. But don't pretend like that's one of the parts of the platform on what they're pushing for overall. Because the overall movement and what they're trying to push for, they're intelligent policies that would make America a better place. So you need to be able to be smart about this and make distinctions. Where sometimes it's hack right-wing arguments against Black Lives Matter, and sometimes it's not. But when it's not, condemn the individual, but not the movement. I mean, I guess this shouldn't be that hard for people to understand, but apparently it is. But if you don't, okay, whatever. Go hang out with the Glenn Becks of the world who want to argue that, you know, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization, and they are working with ISIS, even though they don't even realize it. They're not, but they are, because it's in the magazine. They must have seen it. Oh, God, Black Lives Matter, ISIS, Black Lives Matter, ISIS. Compare the two so that you disregard the movement. That's what he's getting at. Okay, next. All right, now, Sam Harris. Let's do this. So Sam Harris recently did a podcast with Douglas Murray. I recommend listening to the entire thing. It's certainly a very interesting conversation, and I have giant areas of agreement with them in the podcast, and then I also have some areas of disagreement with them. But there was a particular comment from Sam Harris on Noam Chomsky that kind of blew up on the internet. I want to give you what he said here. And then I want to respond to it. Now, again, before I continue here, I do want to implore everybody, if you haven't heard the podcast yet, please go listen to the entire thing. I want everybody to get the full context and to get the full perspective. And then if you agree with him, fine, you agree with him. If you disagree with him, that's also fine. But get the full experience before you decide to take sides on this. So anyway, here's his direct quote that's causing some controversy on the internet, and then I'll break it down for you. Sam says, given a choice between Noam Chomsky and Ben Carson, in terms of the totality of their understanding of what's happening now in the world, I'd vote for Ben Carson every time. Ben Carson is a dangerously deluded religious imbecile. Carson does not. The fact that he is a candidate for president is a scandal, but at the very least, he can be counted on to sort of get this one right. He understands that jihadists are the enemy. Okay. Now, again, go listen to the whole thing. He comes with just a waterfall of hedges and caveats because he is a smart guy, unlike many people think and say. I've always disagreed with anybody who's ever called him a bigot or whatever, a xenophobe or an Islamophobe. I think all of those attacks are totally unfair against Sam. I've defended him in the past on those points, and I will continue to defend him on those points. But in this particular case, do I think this is a fair criticism of Noam Chomsky from Sam Harris? No, I do not. So, his position is, as I understand it, he's saying, look, on virtually every other issue, it's obvious that Noam Chomsky is better than Ben Carson, and Ben Carson believes things that are ridiculous, and Sam Harris could give you a laundry list of a million areas where he disagrees with Ben Carson. But he's saying on this very, very specific issue, this one issue of Islamism and jihadism, he doesn't think Noam Chomsky gets it, and he misses it so much, in Sam Harris's opinion, that would justify a vote for Ben Carson over somebody like Noam Chomsky. So, first of all, do I think that Noam Chomsky doesn't get it on jihadism and Islamism? No, I do not. Now, I know Sam vehemently disagrees with me on this point, but the core of it is this, and this is what I've been trying to stress in this entire debate from the beginning. Guys, it's just a matter of where you put your focus when you have the conversation about jihadism and Islamism. So Sam would focus on, and he's not wrong to focus on this. In fact, he's right when he focuses on
the ideological religious aspect of it, where people truly believe in paradise and they have internalized this belief system, and their concerns are not secular, rational, terrestrial grievances. And he makes that point, and he hammers it home, and he makes it very well, and he's not wrong on that. He's not wrong on that, okay? But he thinks that Noam doesn't get it on that point, and I don't think that's true. I think Noam gets that, but almost as a matter of principle, Noam decides to talk about other factors that are part of the same problem, the problem of the popularity and the increasing strength of Islamism and jihadism around the world. And what Noam focuses on is, what are we responsible for in this field? That's not to say we're to blame 100% for everything. He wouldn't make that claim, and if people believe that, that's a caricature of what Noam actually believes. But he focuses almost as a matter of principle on how we've made it worse. So, for example, he could point to us funding the Mujahideen in the 1980s under Reagan, because we were so against the Soviet Union that we would fund anybody who would fight them, and of course they were fighting the Soviet Union at the time. There was a war in Afghanistan. So we backed people who later became the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We gave them funding, we gave them weapons, and a guy like Noam Chomsky would say, hey, you jackasses, never do that ever again. Now, obviously, Sam would say that as well, but Noam would focus more on that because he thinks that you have to get your own house in order first, and there's an easy way to stop terrorism. It's stop participating in it. So we shouldn't kill civilians, and also we shouldn't fund people that do the worst things around the world. So another thing Noam would focus on is that we prop up and fund and give a tremendous amount of money and take the oil from the Wahhabi regime in Saudi Arabia. Another thing he may focus on is that, hey, you know, we're backing Islamist rebels in Syria against Assad, who's a secular Ba'athist leader. Why would we do that if we have a commitment to, you know, the proper values system and we really are the world police? Why would we prop up some of the worst, most backwards Islamist jihadist regimes? So you're talking about the same problem, Islamism and jihadism, but you're talking about different aspects of it. Sam is focusing on the ideological issue itself and how liberals need to acknowledge that that exists. And Chomsky is focusing on the things that we've done, not to create the ideology, because he wouldn't say we created the ideology, the things we've done to fund that ideology and make it more popular and essentially shoot ourselves in the foot because of our dumb foreign policy. And again, Sam would say, he wouldn't agree that Noam Chomsky gets it on jihadism. That, oh, he doesn't understand that these people don't have secular grievances. But I disagree. From my reading of what Chomsky has said and listening to his speeches and stuff, he gets it, but he's just focusing on how we've made that problem worse by funding it and arming it and aligning ourselves with it against, for example, the Soviet Union and against Assad today, so on and so forth. But I want to leave you with, there's one quote here from Noam Chomsky. This is from Power Systems, his book Power Systems. Somebody on Raw Story pointed this out. Credit to them. I wish I had the name in front of me. I don't right now. But Chomsky has spoken about this issue, and he said the following, quote, "We're driving Pakistanis to a very dangerous position. One of the interesting WikiLeaks exposures was from Ann W. Patterson, the American ambassador in Pakistan, who supports U.S. policy in Pakistan, but pointed out that it carries with it the danger of destabilizing the Pakistani state, maybe even leading to a coup, which could bring about the leaking of radioactive materials into the jihadi networks. The jihadists are not the dominant force in Pakistan, but they're present and have been since the radical Islamization during the Reagan years. Reagan and Saudi Arabia were supporting the worst dictator in Pakistan's history. One of the primary goals was to bring about a radical Islamization of the country, establishing madrasas all over the place. That's where the Taliban comes from. So yes, there is a radical Islamic element in Pakistan, and it's almost certainly engaged in some fashion in the vast nuclear industry. It's conceivable that under pressure, you might find leakage of nuclear materials to jihadi hands, which could lead to a dirty bomb in London or New York. It's likely." So that's Noam Chomsky giving background, context, perspective, and discussing the very problem of, hey man, we don't want our policy to further destabilize and lead to radical Islamists getting their hands on a nuclear weapon and it going off in New York or London. And he's saying it's likely. So we need to do things to prevent that. That's what he's getting at here. So I simply disagree with Sam when he says, I don't think Chomsky gets it on radical Islam. Sam, it's just that he has a different focus on the same problem. He wants to stop us from making that ideology more popular and funding it and arming it. And that's not to say he doesn't acknowledge that there really is a death cult, as you call it, in fundamentalist radical Islam. Not only would he acknowledge that, I think he would do as best as he could to prevent that. And I guess my final point on this is, no, Ben Carson wouldn't. The idea that Ben Carson, oh, well, he gets jihadism better than Noam Chomsky, so he'd be able to fight back against it more effectively. No, no, no. I think a guy like Ben Carson, now, I don't think at all that Sam Harris generalizes about Muslims. He's very specific. He talks about poll numbers. And, you know, he'll never say vast majority. He'll say something like vast numbers of Muslims when he's talking about specific problems, which is true. So I don't think he generalizes about Muslims. But does Ben Carson generalize about Muslims? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Ben Carson said that he doesn't think a Muslim should be president in the U.S., and he'd never, ever advocate for that. Okay, well, then you're saying, yes, all of them. I'm dismissing all of them out of hand. Muslim Americans, it doesn't matter who. How about Keith Ellison, a Democratic congressperson who would never be radicalized in any kind of way? He's an American through and through. He's like, nope, I'm going to dismiss that. Okay, so that guy is, Ben Carson is generalizing about Muslims. And I would say he is bigoted against Muslims. And we've seen evidence of that, not just from Ben Carson, but from many of the Republican candidates. So it's not true, I don't think, and it's not accurate to say only the right who's keeping it real about Islam when the left isn't keeping it real about Islam. I grant you that the focus of the left is not solely on the ideology. It's more on let's not contribute to it and make it worse. But in terms of how they function on the right, I do think they are bigoted against Muslims, not Sam, but they are bigoted against Muslims, and they do generalize about Muslims. And their policy proposals, at least under the Bush administration, it's objectively made the problem of terrorism worse. Because when you go in there, break the region with a sledgehammer, there's the monstrosity of ISIS comes up out of the ruins because you got rid of the dictator who stabilized the region, no matter how bad of a guy he was. And the bottom line is neoconservative policies, right-wing policies to stop the problem of radical Islamism and jihadism have empirically done the opposite. They might think, hey, this is going to make it better. We got to go in there with force and stop them immediately. But no, ground invasions, wanton disregard for killing of civilians with airstrikes and stuff, that has made it worse. And that's what the right generally has supported on this. So it's not like the right keeps it real about Islam and the left doesn't. There are some people on the left who are true regressives who are not good on this issue, like when they say, hey, we need to bring back blasphemy laws to not offend Muslims. That's fucking crazy, and that is regressive. And I could go through other regressive policies that are wrong and don't recognize the problem. But is a guy like Noam Chomsky smart enough to recognize the problem? And is the left, broadly speaking, better on this issue than the right, policy-wise? Absolutely. Okay. Squeeze in a few more here. The Guardian is reporting that textbooks in California... Actually, do I have time for this? Yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. Let me do two more. I'm going to run out of time, but that sucks for you guys. You'll see you later on YouTube. And by the way, everybody have a great week because this is the last show of the week because of this vacation for Thanksgiving and stuff. All right, sorry. Let me get back to this. Turkey reportedly seized 11 million amphetamine pills that fighters are using in Syria. The pills are called Captagon. Business Insider reports, experts say the highly addictive drug is fueling the conflict in Syria as both ISIS militants and Syrian rebels are using the stimulant on the battlefield. It used to be used for ADHD in kids and for narcolepsy and depression in some cases, but it's been banned in the West for a while now, and it's commonly used in Arab countries. But here's why this is particularly noteworthy. Okay, ISIS and various jihadist networks have executed people who smoked cigarettes, for example, drank alcohol. Sometimes, we covered a story once, they did it to one of their own guys. So this is how puritanical, ultra-conservative Islam is what we believe in. or so they say. Because in the Quran 591, it says, Satan's plan to sow hatred and enmity among you with intoxicants and gambling and to hamper you from the remembrance of Allah and from prayer, will you not give up? So, in other words, Satan himself is pushing you into gambling and is pushing you into using intoxicants. No, you can't have that. Cannot have that. That's, you're not acting in accordance with the will of Allah. And you guys say it. I don't say it. You say it. You got to kill the people. Hey, you killed the guy who smoked a cigarette. You killed the guy who drank alcohol. Intoxicants, wrong, bad. It's in the Quran. You can't disagree that God said it. So I guess all of you, all of the ISIS fighters in Syria and elsewhere who've used this, which is almost all of them, got to behead yourselves now. Of course, you want to smack Almighty Allah in the face. Can't use the intoxicants. You use the intoxicants according to your own belief system. You violated it. You know the punishment. Do the right thing. All right, now I'll do one more as I get cut off from you guys. Sorry about that, the blog talk. Is strict and shit, bro?
10 seconds.
The Guardian is reporting that textbooks in California public schools are misleading students on the issue of climate change. They say, quote, the material expresses doubt over whether it is real and promotes the view that increasing temperatures may be beneficial. Stanford did an analysis, and they found that four key science texts given to sixth graders, Stanford did an analysis and they found that four key science texts that were given to sixth graders said that they don't know if climate change is real or if humans are responsible. One of the books from 2008 says, not all scientists agree about the causes of global warming. Some scientists think that the 0.7 Celsius degree rise in global temperatures over the past 120 years may be due in part to natural variation in climate. So the same book stresses that climate change could have some positive effects. Wonderful. And my main response to this is very simple. Where's all the PC culture outrage? Here's some PC shit. Now, we go after PC shit when it's left-wing PC shit, like there's 89 trillion pronouns now to describe people. Well, this is PC shit on the right, where you can't question the dogma of being anti-climate science. And I'll give you more examples. You have that. You have creationism, which is still pushed in public schools. Intelligent design, laissez-faire capitalism works perfectly, as some textbooks say. Slavery wasn't all bad. Reagan was right about everything. The founding fathers were religious. This is a Christian nation. The Native American genocide wasn't really a genocide. Yada, yada, yada. All this stuff's in right-wing textbooks. And that's PC garbage to make people feel like America's never been wrong about anything and they're perfect and we're the anointed ones. So for all the PC outrage pointed at the left, let's point it at the right now, too. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. See you next Monday. Goddamn. All right, peace.